This is Sunday Focus, a weekly public affairs program that looks at the topics affecting our society and the people who are making a change in the community each and every day. The people who have vision for the next generation. Sunday Focus presents new challenges for us, keeping you informed with topics of local and regional interest. Now the host of Sunday Focus, Christine Manica.
Hello and good morning. Welcome back to another edition of Sunday Focus. We had a little break with this organization, but now we're talking about them again. Call the Freedom. They are at the forefront of helping victims of sex and labor trafficking navigate new paths. It's not an easy journey, but the hope is that through education, others can help those being trafficked in our area and state. Becky Rasmussen, she is the CEO and founder of the organization. We've been covering Call the Freedom in a variety of segments with her, including topics of sex and labor trafficking, survivor stories, how the law connects with Call the Freedom and the volunteers of the organization. Call the Freedom is part of every step of the survivor's next chapter, especially when children are involved. We're lucky to have once again Becky Rasmussen with us in the studio. We also have advocate and volunteer prevention trainer Rachel Gage and Steve Sternhagen. He is the Call the Freedom youth navigator. Guys, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. I miss you. I feel like it's been forever. I know. We just had this like short season of not seeing each other. And I just want to thank you for always giving this a voice and allowing the community to learn with us what human trafficking looks like in South Dakota. So good to be back.
Oh, it's good to have you. And thank you for that. It's going to be a big year for Call to Freedom. 10 years?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. No, I say the same thing. You know, in 2015, where God put this on my heart to step into this capacity, I never thought I would see what I'm seeing today. We've had 1,655 individuals walk through the doors of Call to Freedom for help. That doesn't even include all the calls we field or the side conversations we have. Those are actual individuals that qualify for our services that we provide services for. And so as we have journeyed this as a team, we have an incredible team now of 28 individuals.
Wow.
So in a short time, we've went from simply volunteers to 28 paid staff that are doing this work and very passionate team, from individuals who are doing the prevention part to those that are coming alongside and doing the restoration part through case management, through Marissa's house. We've continued to evolve the continuum of care model because of the journey of survivors. Mm-hmm. And as we started journeying life with those that walk through the doors and we would see a gap in services, or we think we could do this service better, or we need to get to kids before bad actors do. That's really what developed our continuum of care model, which brought us next year into our 10-year that Call to Freedom will be providing services, doing prevention, and also intervention.
And for Call to Freedom itself, you're in a new building.
Yeah, we moved. You know, excited. We were in two locations, and then we had three storage units that we would keep donations in. And just, you know, I really wanted to be focused on making sure clients had the services they need. The people are so important. But as the work advanced, it really was important to bring our team together. And one, our response is to have a facility that allowed us to do more of that intervention piece. So having showers on site, as well as that clothing room, as well as respite rooms, we could do service better. And so we had two benefactors who believed in Call to Freedom, came alongside us, purchased the building on our behalf. We will be buying that building back from them. We're approved for the 2027 Community Appeals campaign. Mm. But this becomes an outreach center. So we can dream about sensory rooms and play therapy rooms. And we're really going to be intentional about providing the most effective, responsive services into the anti-human trafficking front.
Did you ever think 10 years ago that this is what Call to Freedom will look like? If you think about it, the origin story, it's in relation to what's coming up here in South Dakota, and that's the Sturgis rally.
Yeah, that's where I had my first encounter with a victim of trafficking that I was aware of. I think now over the years, I'm like, I miss that, you know, through ministry and different services. But had an encounter in 2015 at the 75th annual Sturgis rally. Her name was Marissa. That forever changed my life. And Marissa's house is now named after that. And what I've learned and the team has learned in 10 years is just We need to be intentional about talking about human trafficking, also the prevention piece that we'll be talking about today. And when we started Call to Freedom, we really focused on women, adult women. And what I started to realize as every time we journeyed life with them, they were victimized as youth, and we never identified them. Their story started much younger than them walking through the doors 10, 15 years later. And so that's really what birthed this prevention piece, which we're going to talk about today, which is Speak Up, and other curriculum I have, and Steve will talk about that. But we want to get to kids and equip them to make better decisions so they don't fall prey to sextortion, human trafficking, or commercial sexual exploitation. So prevention has become a big part, not only the restoration intervention, but also prevention within Call to Freedom.
You know, no matter what changes have happened within the 10-year span of Call to Freedom, but afterwards, in the next 10 years, survivors are always going to be there. And I know a lot of people have been talking about stories, not just nationally, but here in South Dakota, where it does hit closer to home. Do you have any thoughts about that, whether locally or nationally?
Yeah, you know, we obviously want to see more justice come in this case, but it's difficult to walk an individual that's been impacted by human trafficking through our judicial system. It's just tough for somebody to come in and have to reshare their story and relive their trauma in order to put somebody behind bars. But this last month, we actually had that where there was two sexual trafficking indictments of an individual in the Winter area that actually was indicted on sex trafficking, will be actually sentenced here in the next few months. And that's tough. I mean, these were youth that were involved with that case, and those youth had to get back up and be brave and courageous and share. And, you know, now they have to live life after the fact, and we live life with them, and it's hard. And to get justice is hard. So I just know that we have really great working relationships with law enforcement here locally. And they've been really intentional about streamlining those processes through the task force and communication. How can we do this better as a collective team? And then we see the national case when we talk about P. Diddy. And, you know, we had some, you know, obviously strong feelings towards the bias of prostitution. You know, we're talking about, is a victim willing or is a victim actually not willing?
Yeah.
And those bias between what is prostitution and what is trafficking, we're still figuring that out as a nation. And there were clear indicators in that P. Diddy case that there was force, fraud, and coercion. That is human trafficking. That is not prostitution. So it's really those cases that we're learning from and really dealing with some of those biases that are real within our communities.
Yeah, people are still learning about it. I know the other day you talked with Marty Jackley. He's been busy as of recent, but you had the opportunity to talk to him about Call to Freedom and then the Sturgis rally. Any thoughts that he has on it since the last time we spoke with him?
Yeah, he worked on some legislation that went into effect July 1st, which was Senate Bill 58, which is to bring harsher sentences to those that are doing this activity, that are trafficking individuals. And so we had a gap between state legislation and federal legislation. And so Mr. Jackley and his office, through conversations with law enforcement, made these changes to our local statute. And that statute now has been updated to mirror the federal statute. So we have harsher sentences. We defined coercion. And so I'm really grateful to his office for taking a stance on this and really also equipping Mary Beth, who's a human trafficking coordinator, to play more of an active role in coordinating these services, responses, and then training law enforcement as well. And then you come to the Sturgis rally, right?
Yeah.
And you have these operations that happen, and there's just a lot of manpower that goes into these operations that they've been doing for 10 years, a lot of nights that law enforcement's up and working these online cases and sting operations that require a lot of time and manpower. And so we're just grateful to our law enforcement entities on the Attorney General through the Department of Criminal Investigations, as well as our federal entities, for their heart behind this and their intent to get to those individuals before they get to victimizing individuals as well.
Imagine what Mr. Jackley can do for Call to Freedom if it gets national for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Just imagine.
Might be
it.
Running for Congress or something. Who knows?
I know.
So
Who knows?
We're hopeful for that. But whatever God has, we're willing to step into that. And that has really been the journey of Call to Freedom, is that we've just followed the lead of the Lord, and his heart has been for this to get to every individual and to promote Call to Freedom to do that well. And so we're excited to be here to talk about that.
Absolutely. We're talking about Call to Freedom, going over 10 years, some youth prevention training that we're going to talk about, too. We have, of course, Becky Rasmussen, Rachel Gage. She is an advocate and volunteer prevention trainer, and Steve Sternhagen on with us, too, for Call to Freedom. We're getting to you guys. Don't worry. Now, we're talking about human trafficking situations, and any traffic situation is hard. However, it seems more heartbreaking when kids are involved. We've been talking a lot about adult survivors, but kids are just as affected by trafficking. Can anyone provide statistics about kids and trafficking?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things we want to talk about is that online platforms were used to recruit 55% of sex trafficking victims in active criminal cases. And that was cited by the Human Trafficking Institute in 2021. One in five teens have experienced sextortion. That's pretty scary that your kids are online and do you know who they're talking to? And that was through Thorne of 2025. But also on the trafficking side, I don't know if you knew that South Dakota has the ninth highest number of confirmed victims of all U.S. states. Mm. And so, you know, it is happening here locally. It is happening online. It's happening in a lot of different tactics. And I think one of the things that people have to remember is that this is business. And this is a money-making business. It's just like selling drugs or selling guns. They're selling human beings mm-hmm. for profit. And you can sell a human being over and over again for profit ongoing. And they're really hard cases to prove. And so what we've seen is not only, yes, you hear about the drugs, but there's intersections between that drug trafficking as well as human trafficking that is happening at the same time.
And it's tough to hear those stories, but we have to highlight them to make people aware of them. And Steve Sternhagen, he's with us right now, the youth navigator at Call to Freedom. Now, I read that past survivors have mentioned that there needs to be more trafficking awareness among the youth. And you said, I read on the website, that that's the reason why you believe that your position was created.
I believe that's what I heard. That was one of the reasons that my position was created, just because they felt if somebody would come into the school and talk about it, that one, they might have been prevented them from getting in the situation they did, but two, also, they might have been able to come out and get some help sooner than going through some of the struggles that they have and maybe not sharing that for 10 years, where if somebody was in the school sharing that, that might have been a benefit to them, and they wanted to make sure that the kids were getting that information so to prevent them from ending up in a trafficking situation or a situation where they might get hurt.
You've had quite the journey to get to Call to Freedom. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I was listening to Becky talk about the task force team, and I think that played a role in my position at Call to Freedom. But prior to that, I was working with a conference that we were putting on, one of the feedbacks. I was in charge of providing speakers for our conference, and the feedback that we got is more information on human trafficking. And I was told there's an agency in Sioux Falls called Call to Freedom. It's relatively new. And I made a phone call. Becky, along with a couple other people, came. I believe the first time was to Spearfish, and then another time in Pier, and came and spoke. And after we got Becky and some of her colleagues to come talk about human trafficking, she brought up the task force team and asked if I would be part of the joint task force team or original task force team they were developing. And we got split up into a youth section. And what is kind of neat about that now is there's six of us from that original meeting that are still on the youth task force team, which is kind of cool. So, and our youth task force team has been fairly active in doing different projects and events. So, and we meet, we took 2 months off for the summer, and then we meet on a monthly basis via Zoom. And we had one meeting just recently in person, which was good. But my position from the task force team, I was working for the state of South Dakota as a juvenile correction agent. And the position, youth navigator, came available. And I think I called Becky and asked if they had hired anybody yet and said, well, the position is closing on Friday, and I think it was on Thursday. If you want to send in your resume and application, I sent it in, and I think I interviewed on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So I ended up, I was fully invested with the state after 29 years, so I retired and started working with Call to Freedom 3 days later, which has been a very quick 5 years. This is the start of my sixth year, and it has gone by very fast.
So. What are some of your main roles as youth navigator?
Well, my role has changed quite a bit over the past 5 or 6 years. And initially, I was doing some intake stuff, meeting with clients, meeting with youth, and it has grown and changed to the point where we do a lot of prevention stuff. I do different information booths, vendor booths at conferences. There's been just recently 2 or 3 conferences that I had a vendor booth, but also spoke, did a presentation as a breakout session, doing different events. I was just at the Levitt with the ADA festival, which was kind of neat, and did some different trainings with law enforcement and with some other agencies. So, but you know, do some of that, but also try to meet with a variety of different schools, agencies, counselors to get information into the schools, into treatment centers, youth groups, church groups, so that kids can become aware of some of the dangers out there and deal with things and how they can, you know, look at developing trustworthy relationships, who they should trust, who they should not trust. And social media, I think, is been our most popular youth presentation that we have done. We're certified in 2 different curriculums that we provide a variety of different trainings. The social media one creates different things where we have a grooming process that we talk about is a big part of that curriculum and when we talk with youth. And it's all age appropriate. I do some presentations from kindergarten on up to 12th grade and some college presentations. But the kindergarten ones initially were very scary for me to come in and what are they going to do? How are they going to react? How are they going to respond? But have been very good. I don't think we give kids enough credit for how smart they are and how well they remember things. Some interesting stories have come about with my kids' presentation, all of them for that matter, but some of the younger ones are kind of cool where they, I just went back to a school where I did my first kindergarten presentation last July and just finished up at that school, their summer school program this July. And most of the younger kids remembered my name. It's Steve from Minecraft or Minecraft Steve. And they put those connections together. But, you know, one of the first presentations that we did, a girl gets up and walks by me and says, oh, my tooth fell out, and she's holding a tooth that just came out during the presentation and hands it to the teacher, and they head off to the bathroom. So didn't miss a beat. She just walked right in front, and it was like, here we go. So you never know what to expect with some of the younger kids. So
no, they adapt like sponges, sort of speak.
Yeah.
And with the curriculums that you're talking about, Speak Up, Ready to Stand, can you tell us about those?
Speak Up and Ready to Stand, one of the things that I typically do with both of the presentations is talk about value. What do you value? And everybody has something that the value, and value is a little different. Another big one is consent. We look at different ways to get consent. And, you know, it can be a very scary subject for kids and hard. And I try to use different forms of humor to ease the tension, where I might look at you, for example, sitting there and say, oh, you look like trouble. Can I call you trouble? I've only met you briefly, so, you know. But
you're not the only one that's called me that, by the way.
that's why I picked that one. And I have, and sometimes kids are, oh, that's what my family calls me. Yeah, you can call me trouble. Or smiley, or I make fun of their shirt. And we come back later in the presentation when we're talking about consent. And, well, did I get permission or consent from anybody? And a lot of times, well, no. And then say, well, yeah, you did. You asked her to call her, if you could call her trouble. So we talk about that. And then we talk about So just because you gave me permission to call you Trouble today in the classroom, if I see you tonight at a basketball game, can I just walk up and say, hey, Trouble, how are you? And they say, well, yeah, I said you could, but in reality it is, no, you need to get consent over because it changes on a regular basis and it's not a one-time thing. So that, you know, that's one of the things I like talking about. Grooming is another big one with that Ready to Stand curriculum where we have different activities for that. And both curriculums, we end up talking about safety and how to stay safe. We have some activities that you can do. We have some worksheets, different handouts that we talk about how to stay safe and what it looks like to stay safe. And then trustworthiness. And it's like some interesting conversations that come up because of that too. And typically I pick out somebody that I may have called Trouble or different and said, do you trust me? And it's like, well, yeah, because you're here doing this or whatever. But one of my favorite explanations, and I use this in an adult presentation, is I had a fifth grade girl said, well, yeah, I trust you because you know the principal, you know the counselor, you know the teacher. You're talking about this. You talk about your grandkids. So on this hand, I trust you. But on the other hand, I just met you, so I don't trust you at all. So when we talked about how there's going to be different levels of trust between different people, different scenarios and situations. And those first five things that she talked about were all reasons why she should trust me. But on the other hand, you need to get to know that person a little more and in depth before you develop that trustworthy relationship. So,
yeah, good thing to keep in mind, too. If you're just listening, we're talking about Call to Freedom and how they relate to the youth with their programming and other curriculums that they offer. Becky Rasmussen with us, along with Steve Sternhagen and Rachel Gage, who has been patiently waiting to come on. Now, just like Steve, Rachel, you are also passionate about the youth being an advocate and also a volunteer prevention trainer. Now, before we get into that, we have something in common. We're both transplants, and somehow we both met Becky, and she got us involved with Call to Freedom. So we have Becky to thank for that.
Absolutely.
Rachel.
Thank you, Becky.
So you're a mom, you're a Call to Freedom volunteer prevention trainer for the last 2 years now. What inspired you to be a part of Call to Freedom?
Absolutely. Well, I was very impressed with what Becky spoke of earlier as the continuum of care model, but also we had a really beautiful conversation a couple of years ago, and she was explaining to me that no matter how many times a person walks through the door of Call to Freedom, whether it's one time or 100 times, you're going to be treated with respect, dignity, kindness, grace, empathy. And I thought, these are the most beautiful pillars of an organization. How can I get involved with something like this?
Right, exactly. And can you talk about some of your advocacy work?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So as Steve mentioned earlier, we do have the Speak Up curriculum, and I have had the pleasure of being a youth prevention volunteer with that particular curriculum. So I get to work with kindergarten through second graders and then third through fifth graders in a variety of summer care programs, after school programs, and it has been an absolute joy.
Can you share some stories that you've experienced?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think even just going along with the fact that the respect for children and how brilliant and bright and imaginative and amazing they are and what they bring to the table. So this is also a scenario-based curriculum. Mm-hmm. So we teach them some fantastic terms. We talk about boundaries. We talk about a triangle of trust, which is how you can identify at least three people in your life that you can trust with a safe or an unsafe secret. And then we go through a variety of scenarios so they can have some real world application. And it is so much fun just to see how maybe some of the answers start out as, okay, if an unsafe person is approaching you, what do you do? And a lot of times the answer I get is, I will karate chop him or I will use my ninja moves.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm like, fantastic. Yes. Yes. And then though, how we can sort of evolve and take that initial answer, but then provide them with other examples of ways to handle that. And even some of the deeper topics, we do talk about things like shock. We talk about consent, and again, in an age appropriate way. But I think another goal is that the kids never feel isolated or alone. Unfortunately, there are a variety of children that have been exposed to really challenging and difficult things. And so if we can reassure them that shock is a normal reaction to have, and it's never too late to tell somebody your story. And here's these three, at least three safe adults that we've identified that you can share your story with.
So out of the 2 years that you've been with Call to Freedom, what's something that you've learned?
Oh, that is such a great question.
I know.
I think just so much in general, my awareness, my consciousness has been raised about human trafficking in even, we always talk about Sioux Falls, South Dakota, yeah. and it is a beautiful and charming and wonderful place. And also, we are a corridor around some major interstates, and there's a lot of things that happen. So once our awareness has been raised, then we have the opportunity to do something about it. And so I just feel so grateful to have an opportunity to go into schools. I'm a mother myself. It's important to me, even concepts that I've been able to share with my own children.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for that opportunity.
Without me asking Becky this question, she already answered it for me about what has changed within the last 10 years of sex trafficking, labor trafficking, and what remains the same and needs to be improved. Anyone can answer this.
Yeah, I think when we talk about this as a business, it evolves and it continues to look different. So years ago, you saw the movie Taken, where people were kidnapped and chained and, you know, held hostage. But now we have coercion, mm-hmm. and coercion becomes a very common, and fraud, it becomes a very common tactic where you're actually grooming, as you heard Steve talk about, individuals to believe that they are an active participant in this,
right.
but they're actually, coercion is being utilized. So it's a business. It evolves. We see labor trafficking evolve. We see sex trafficking evolve. You know, we see this commercial sexual exploitation as well as sextortion, mm-hmm. constantly changing the tactics in which they do. And so these trainings are so important that we can continue to train our partners within the communities that are first responders, as well as our community, on these tactics, because if they can make money off of selling a human being, guess what? They're going to find new ways to do that. And they always find not only vulnerabilities with individuals, but they also find vulnerabilities within our systems and our laws.
Outside of presentations and discussions in the classroom, how can kids or even parents stay alert and aware about the harmful people online or even in public?
I think one of the biggest things is just be aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to what you're doing, not doing. A lot of times I get frustrated watching people walk through the mall or driving as you're getting past, as they're sitting on their phone, looking at their phone, not even paying attention
to
their surrounding, what's going on. So I think that awareness piece is big, not only for parents and kids, but also for parents, know who your kids are talking to on the phone, know what they're doing with their phone, and, you know, set some limits. And if you don't understand some of the situations, which phones can be and tablets can be kind of scary for some people, some of us older people that don't understand that,
yeah.
where, you know, get some help with that, because it's very scary. I know my 9-year-old granddaughter can show me how to do things on my phone that I do not know how to do. So
isn't that wild?
Very wild. I think that awareness piece is a big thing, and be aware of your surrounding as what's going on. And if something doesn't seem right, then share something with somebody. And that's what we talk about with the kids, like with our Speak Up, when we talk about what is your safety meter, your heart or your stomach, which your intuition. If it doesn't seem right, say something to a trusted adult. I think that's the same thing that we need to do with our surroundings, rather than say, oh, somebody else will deal with that, or that's somebody else's problem. But if you see something, say something.
Steve expressed that beautifully, but for sure the empowerment piece, that kids have an intuition in them. And again, depending on our age-appropriate curriculum, we'll talk to little ones about, you might have an icky feeling in your tummy and something doesn't feel right, but you can be empowered to follow that intuition, and we want to respect when kids come to us. And these things are hard to hear as parents, as teachers, as caregivers. It's scary and it's upsetting when these things come to us, but we don't ever want a child to feel that they are not listened to. When red flags come up, it's our duty to follow up and make sure that kids are safe. And that's part of our job. So again, to empower kids to follow that intuition, and for us as adults to respond accordingly.
What would you say, Rachel, to anyone who wants to volunteer with Call the Freedom, like what you've been doing?
I'm so thrilled that you asked. We have the most wonderful volunteer coordinator, Eden, at Call the Freedom. You can go to the website, you can call into the office, and Eden will hook you up with all kinds of amazing volunteer opportunities.
That's awesome. And Becky, I know we got to wrap it up here in just a little bit, but you happily reminded me about the community breakfast coming up.
I'm so glad you can come. We look forward to hosting you the morning of September 18th.
Yes.
And it's bright and early. Doors open at 6:45. Program starts at 7:30. It's our one and only fundraiser throughout the year. We invite the community. We will do an ask, so I don't want people to be surprised, because we are, the whole goal of the event is to raise funds so we can continue to do work we're doing. However, it's also an education piece. And so you can go to calltofreedom.org under our events page, as well as what Rachel was talking about, calltofreedom.org under our volunteer page, and you get registered for the event. We're looking for table hosts, so individuals can be a part of it and then invite 9 of their closest friends that want to hear or can give into the mission, or you can just attend, and you can do that at calltofreedom.org.
Very easy to support this great organization. 10 years and counting in the making. Call to Freedom, talking about the kids that they serve within the organization. Becky Rasmussen, Rachel Gage, Sterney for his fan club, Steve Sterhagen. Thank you guys so much for coming this
morning.
Thank
you for having us.
Thanks much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Sunday Focus is a public affairs program of Results Radio Town Square Media, Sioux Falls.